Track 11, Volunteer's Tales. Now, someone else who found himself far from our shores at one point in his life is our very own Tony Stimpson. In Tony's case, though, there was no criminality involved, as far as I'm aware. Here is Tony to tell you in his own words about his corner of Africa.
On the 6th of February 1963, aged just 22, I boarded a South African Airways jet bound for Salisbury, southern Rhodesia, now called Harare in present-day Zimbabwe. It had been extremely cold in England. Farmers were using pneumatic drills to dig carrots out of the ground, and there'd been ice on the inside of my bedroom window for 3 weeks. I was very happy to be going to the sunshine. Central Africa has three seasons. There's a hot, dry season from September to November, a hot, wet season from December to April, and a cool, dry season from May to August. The heat that hit me as I walked down the gangway at Salisbury Airport was something I shall never forget. I set about looking for a job, and after a chance meeting in the bar of the Norfolk Hotel, I made contact with the dairy department at the Ministry of Agriculture, where there was a vacancy for a milk recorder in northern Rhodesia. I got the job and flew up to Lusaka, where I spent the next 6 months travelling from farm to farm. It was a great way to see and explore the country. One day in August, I arrived at the Kafue Pilot Polder, one of my recorded dairies, to find that one of the staff had left, and I was offered his job. The polder was a research project funded and run by Rhodesia Selection Trust, RST, one of the two large copper mining companies. The other was Anglo-American. The general manager speeded up the application process so that I was able to start work on the 4th of September. Having arrived in the country with just a suitcase, I left the relative bustle of life in Lusaka, employed a cook, and set up house on my own. It was quite a step. The Kafue River rises north of the Copper Belt, close to the Congo border, and runs through much of the central part of Zambia, collecting water from a vast area, and then opening out into an enormous flat plain of 1.25 million acres, prior to going through a gorge and spilling into the Zambezi between Lake Kariba and the Mozambique border. Every year at the end of the rainy season, the swollen river floods the whole of this plain. As the waters start to recede in August, lush green grazing appears in the otherwise dry and parched landscape, providing an abundance of grass for cattle and hungry game. It was on the edge of these flats that in 1958, RST, encouraged by their far-sighted agricultural adviser, Leonard Tracy, created the polder. It consisted of 700 acres enclosed by a Dutch-style earth wall to keep out the floodwaters. The idea was that during the dry season, this water could be let in and used for irrigation. The soil of the Kafue Flats is a very fertile black clay. About 50 million acres of this soil is found in the world, mostly in the Indian subcontinent. It's extremely productive, but very difficult to work. Previously, nobody had thought it worth cultivating, so we were doing original research. Leonard Tracy's vision was for a vast polder of many thousand acres with the infrastructure in place to enable hundreds of African farmers to grow commercial crops, lifting them out of the subsistence farming into which they had been born. Our brief was to find out which crops grew best, how to grow them, and then how we could adapt African farming processes to get the best yields. My job was to oversee the work of 7 experimental farmers who were settled on the polder. They were quite a hard-working group. They grew cotton, maize, groundnuts, and soya beans in the rainy season, and irrigated wheat in the dry season. Most of the planting was done for them by machines in communal blocks, and we then left them to tend the crops and harvest them. Their wives and children all worked too, and they lived in wooden houses raised on stilts in the middle of their farming area. They had no electricity or running water. In a wider context, we were also experimenting with growing sugarcane, rice, tobacco, and a fibre crop called kenaf in the rainy season, and potatoes and barley in the dry season under irrigation. At midnight on the 24th of October 1964, which was United Nations Day, Northern Rhodesia became the Independent Republic of Zambia, and Kenneth Kaunda became the first president. In quite a short time, all the old colonial systems were abandoned and a new African way of government took over. Sometimes it was not very effective. Zambians were promoted to all permanent secretary posts, often with very little experience. Many of the white Afrikaans farmers left to go back to South Africa, and copper production, the lifeblood of the economy, took a downturn. And then the president decided to nationalise the mines without consulting anybody, and production went down again. To compound the problems, the price of copper began to fall. The economy started a downward spiral, and at the same time, the new government began a series of high-profile building projects which they could ill afford. A new airport and a new parliament building were just two such projects. But on the polder, life carried on very much as before. And after 10 years, RST was beginning to see an end to their involvement and decided to give the project as a going concern to the research department of the Ministry of Agriculture. We were all offered employment as civil servants. I was the only one who showed an interest. But first, I needed to return to unfinished business in England. I flew home at the end of April 1965 to meet up again with Elizabeth. We were married in July and went to Zambia together in August, and I started work on the polder again. But that's another chapter.
Tony, and clearly if you returned to Africa to work following your marriage, you had found little to moan about there.